We've been gabbing. Right. We've been gabbing, as you heard.
That's right.
Okay, well, count it back in.
I'm Nathan Ferrugia, author of the Helix novels, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
Welcome to another episode of Comic Popcorn Movies, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan,
Jacob,
Logan.
And as you can tell, we are a trooper down. Lenny had to go home. He wasn't feeling the best, so he begged off. So we said, definitely, if you're not feeling well, to go home. But we still have Nathan here. So Nathan, thank you for continuing on with us.
My pleasure.
And of course, it's Nathan Ferrugia. He's the author of the Fifth Column in the Helix series. So you can jump on Amazon on some of the other jobbers. And we'll have Nathan, some of the others, where they can find some of your work at. Because I use Amazon for the most part.
Yeah, Amazon. Amazon's your best.
Okay.
Okay. The easy one.
Okay. But we'll get into a little bit more of his novels towards the end. We're going to jump back into our discussion about Rogue One that Nathan's been so kind to do with us. And hopefully we'll make this a yearly tradition, because it's kind of fun to have somebody come in and chat with us about Star Wars. So it's been fun so far. So thanks again, Nathan, for doing that. We're going to jump to Jacob and let him kind of bring it in for us. When we left out last time, we said we were going to talk about some of the cameos and some other things we might have skipped on, but we'll let Jacob take it away and go from there.
All right. Well, I think I'll start off with the first thing is what is not in Rogue One, which just shows that it's also, again, a standalone movie, and there is no crawl. Mm. That True. Tells you know the crawl, you know, which shows up in episodes 1 through 7 and tells you exactly what's going on and what to expect in the movie. That is absent. You get the flash of Star Wars, and then it immediately drops into a planet. So
I actually kind of enjoy that. I mean, because you know, with the scroll up and then it goes, it's like they're throwing that in there to waste film time. That's the way I feel like, anyway.
Well, it was a tradition, because Lucas was basing it off of the old serial TV shows, where they kind of did give updates between episodes. So that's how I understood where the crawl came from.
Yep.
And then, if I remember correctly, it worked pretty well with the Clone Wars, because it did give you backstory on the episode that might not have occurred at all within the series.
And it was a little bit different too, though. It wasn't a crawl, it was like the HoloNet feed.
Yeah.
So that's what it was in Clone Wars. Yeah. So, but let Jacob continue on here.
And so when we get into cameos, if you have been following Disney XD, I think is what they call it.
Yep.
We'll start there, because that's some of the most recent, and they have their TV show, which is Rebels, which it features a couple of characters. The daughter of Cham Syndulla, who is in the Clone Wars TV series. He's a Twi'lek, and they live on Ryloth, if I remember correctly.
Not sure.
And that is Hera Syndulla and Kanan Jarrus, who was an old Jedi Padawan, and their little band of misfits. Some of the cameos you can see there is you hear... over the loudspeaker, them calling for General Syndulla, and in, I believe it's the middle of season 2, if not, then the beginning of season 3, Hera Syndulla is promoted to General Syndulla as part of one of the Rebel Cell fleets. You also see their ship, which is called the Ghost, and you can also get a glimpse of Chopper, which is their little astro droid.
Yep. You have to be very good to see that one, because I still haven't. Have you seen that one, Nathan? Just to kind of see if you have.
I did, but I didn't actually know what it was or it had any significance until later on.
Okay.
What droid it was and where it was from. So yeah, that was kind of cool though.
See, I saw it and it got completely past me until somebody showed a still on one of the sites, and then it's like, oh, okay, missed that one.
Oh, what was it that I had said? she had a stuffed animal of...
Oh, a stormtrooper?
A stormtrooper.
You kind of thought that was a reminiscent of Rey having the X-Wing pilot doll.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was kind of a tie there that they have dolls that they can play with. So you can see the tie, I guess. You can kind of see, I guess, loosely. So who would want to get that in their collection? Me! But yeah, that's another loose connection between Force Awakens and Rogue One. If you can, you can pull that connection, I guess.
Sure. And then let's see, moving on from those guys, because I don't think anybody else has watched Rebels except for me, because I'm just a
piece of
it. I've watched some of it.
Okay.
Well, I think I've watched like the first few episodes of the first season.
Okay. I'm caught up because I'm nothing but a giant kid.
If you, hey, giant kids meet Transformers. We met Transformers this weekend.
Nice. But if,
true.
And then I guess moving up into the future, is the Death Star fires its single reactor nuclear blast. The two guys that kind of duck away from the beam, I'm told, is Johnson, the director of Episode 8, The Last Jedi. I think it's called The Last Jedi. Not a good Star Wars fan sometimes. And then I think it's his screenwriter. That's what I've been told. You obviously can't exactly see their faces, so it's difficult at times. But I've been told they were in there. There is...
Kind of like Daniel Craig in a Stormtrooper outfit.
Right. You didn't know it was him until someone says, hey, by the way, that's Daniel Craig.
Who is Daniel Craig?
Oh, my gosh.
The newest James Bond.
Oh.
Do you watch James Bond?
No.
There's the door. Have a great evening. Make new friends.
Is his face visible in that? Though you never see his face.
No,
you
never see it. He's just completely
such a shame. So. Why put him in there?
To what I heard, he was just such a fan. He just wanted to be part of it, no matter what it was.
Yeah, they were doing either reshoots for Spectre or stuff on a sound stage for Spectre at the exact same time they were on the lot for Force Awakens. And I guess he just walked over one day and was like, "Oh, hey, by the way, can I be in this?"
Quick and easy.
They used Simon Pegg as well, didn't they?
Yeah, Simon Pegg in Force Awakens is the guy who hands out portions of food.
That's right.
So
that's right.
He's in that. And then Kevin Smith apparently voiced a couple of stormtroopers here and there. I don't know exactly where at, but I read that he did it, a couple cameo voiceovers. So that's also in Force Awakens. Moving back to Rogue One, there's the obvious C-3PO and R2-D2.
Oh, yes.
You know, they're just kind of there. And how they got from there onto Leia's ship, I don't know. I'm going to go with movie physics. But they're there.
Well, Leia's ship didn't get there until the main fleet arrived. So there is some time gap between them going to Scarif and the main fleet arriving. So you don't see it. It's off screen, I guess.
Yeah, like I said, we'll just go with movie physics and time slows down when you jump to light speed and theory of relativity and all the other stuff that they don't consider. But so they were in there. There was, what does I say, the Rebels cast. Then there was obviously Red and Gold Leader. And that was the time I got the most excited because I was like, hey, wait, I know those guys.
Yes. And that was old footage, right?
Okay. Yeah, that was footage that they had filmed for Episode 4, but didn't make the cut. I mean, so they had it, and then they threw it in there. And then we got to watch Red 5 die.
Of course.
So,
and the significance of that is they have an opening for...
Right, for Luke.
Yeah. So do you think that's convenient storytelling, Nathan, or that just they're just tying it in perfectly? With Red 5.
It worked for me.
Did it work for you?
Yeah, I enjoyed the Red and Gold Leader as well. I didn't actually notice too many, but they were the ones that I noticed. Mm-hmm. And Wedge, of course. And I was just reading up on Wedge's inclusion in Rogue One out of curiosity. And it's really interesting because he played Wedge in the original movies, as we know. Mm-hmm. But they didn't use his voice because he hadn't quite perfected an American accent at the time. So they brought someone in for a voiceover. And then there's apparently a fake Wedge in the briefing room as well. So that's interesting in itself. So, yeah, he isn't credited in the movie for his voice, but, you know, still there. And I think that's also, like you were saying, with the leaders, original footage that they used.
Right, I think they had to get a, didn't they have to get a new actor for General Dudonna? I think they had to recast him.
Because
General Dudonna is in one of the scenes of the council or something in there.
He's younger, isn't he, in Rogue One? That would have been a younger actor.
Very slightly, because he was already white-haired and had the full beard and everything. But then from the council, you also have other cameos.
Yeah, you have... was it Mon Mothma? She's there. Bail Organa is there before he goes to Alderaan and goes boom. So.
And they mentioned a certain Jedi Master.
Yeah, they talk about Obi-Wan.
So in a sense, that's a cameo too. So they had some cool little spots.
Oh yeah, they did just enough fan service that it wasn't too over the top, but it was still very nice.
And there's two that I remember that you haven't mentioned.
Probably.
It was on, I can't remember the planet's name, but it was where they team up with Chirrut and Baz, Ponda Baba and Dr. whatever his name is. The Strange. Two that were in the cantina.
Yeah.
And got.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah, those guys. He's a wanted man on 11 systems.
So, and a lot of people think that didn't fit too well. What's your thoughts about that as a storytelling technique, Nathan? Did they shoehorn that in too hard, or did it work for you?
Well, considering I don't remember it, I'd say it worked. I'd say it worked just fine for me. Yeah, it didn't stick out for me. I'm pretty sure I recognize them. You know, it's a strong nod, but it didn't seem out of place to me.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
If anything, it was more of a, oh, hey, it's those guys. And then we moved on.
Yeah.
You know, that was more of it than, I mean, a lot of those cameos, that's how my reaction was, like, oh, hey, that guy. And then I was like, I remember him. He's in episode 4. Or, right. Hey, look, it's C-3PO and R2-D2.
Well, the question with the fans with those two was, how did they get off, was it Jedha?
Yeah, Jedha.
How did they get off Jedha to be on Tatooine? And it was like, well, people were getting off. It's like they weren't, well, people were getting off planet. They might have been getting off too, I don't know. But they were getting off planet. So I just said, kind of like you said with R2 and C-3PO, movie magic, they got on their ship and left before the strike. That's where a lot of people were having the difficulties is, how did they get off and not be killed?
Well, the way I would explain it would be, if that guy is a wanted man on 11, 12, however many systems he's wanted on, and all of a sudden the Empire starts moving in even more into the town, I'm going to get out of there before I get caught.
True.
So, I mean, they could have just grabbed their ship and ran away. And then so they went to Tatooine because it's controlled. Around. Yeah, it's controlled by the Hutts.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the other person on Jedha, that's a cameo. We've mentioned it earlier in the first part of our discussion, but Saw Gerrera.
Oh, yeah, he was in Clone Wars.
Yep. So I'll call back to that animated series. Mm-hmm. So I can't think of too many. Can you think of any others, Nathan, off the top of your head that we might have missed?
Not so much characters. I sort of noticed a bit of a hat tip to a lot of movies that the director liked. I think he mentioned in an interview a long time ago, before Rogue One was out, that he was inspired by Ridley Scott's Alien, Blade Runner, and even Apocalypse Now and the Thin Red Line, for sort of the very, which I can see when they have those beach scenes on the planet and the conflict and the warlike engagements that were taking place there in what was a very sort of almost tropical setting. So I think he drew a lot of inspiration from those movies. And I did read, actually, that the planetoid that they landed on midway through the movie was inspired by a planet in Alien. It had a very similar sort of atmosphere. And he's said straight up that is was one of his inspirations, which was kind of cool.
Oh, I didn't realize that, so that's kind of neat. And I learned a little kernel of knowledge there. Ha-ha. Because I didn't think about it until you mentioned it, but then when you think back, yeah, that did have a... I can't remember what the moon or whatever it was, designation from Alien, but yeah, it did have a similar feel to it, especially from Aliens, because you get a little bit more bigger view when they come down in the dropship. So that, okay, I got you there. That makes sense. And I guess Blade Runner would be probably on Jedha with everything kind of going in and out with the hovercrafts, and I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, it was Coruscant as well.
Yeah, Coruscant that way.
Might have drawn some inspiration a little bit from Blade Runner there. I think that was more just, you know, general inspiration in terms of literal world building. So.
And there's one main character and a group of cohorts that we haven't mentioned, that Jacob mentioned between episodes, and that was Krennic. So do you want to get a little bit into him and his Death Troopers?
Yes. Director Krennic. He is he's an interesting character. He's played by Ben Mendelsohn, who is a fantastic actor. I just watched a YouTube clip of Ben Mendelsohn doing a dramatic reading of something. I don't remember. I don't remember what else, but it was like a Disney song. And like, it's not supposed to be dramatic at all, and it's terrifying because he's very... It's Simba's I Just Can't Wait to Be King, if I remember correctly. And so, like, that's an upbeat, fun little song, and when he does it, it's not. So, but he plays Director Krennic. It's like
if Just Can't Wait to Be King was sung by Scar.
Right, pretty much. And so, with Krennic, he is the guy that oversaw the building of... at least the main weapon of the Death Star, if not the entire Death Star himself. And he comes into big conflicts with Tarkin, especially after the test on Jeddah, where they blow up the city, and that's when Saw Gerrera gets killed. But it's interesting because you almost kind of start to feel sorry for the guy because he's getting pushed out by this bureaucracy and basically people that outrank him deciding to take what they can from him because they outrank him. But then he's just a douchebag, and so you're like, nah, screw him. So, but it's just an interesting story. And he has his Death Troopers, and they killed Jin's mother, so screw him.
There you go. What'd you think of the Death Troopers, Nathan?
I really liked the design of them. I think they put a lot of thought into, you know, keeping the same aesthetic of the original Star Wars movies, even to the point where you could even see that the very 70s hairstyles and sideburns on characters who weren't wearing masks, which was really cool. And I liked that attention to detail, and I thought, yeah, this feels like it's in this time, you know, in this universe. It didn't feel like a remake so much. And you know, even with the Death Troopers and all of the designs of introducing new types of characters and, you know, new types of stormtroopers that still felt genuine and original. They kept the same style as well. So that's one thing that I really enjoyed. And I enjoyed that little conflict as well with Krennic. I thought that worked, you know, really nicely, that, you know, superiors were taking credit for something that was entirely his. Which was a great way to sort of give us a little bit of sympathy towards, you know, an antagonistic character who we're not meant to sympathize with. You know, not much time was spent on that. It was just a little bit, you know, to get into that character. So I like that. I thought that worked.
And I think the interesting thing about the Death Troopers, what sets them apart from the Stormtroopers, is they can actually hit things.
True.
And that's actually
when they actually cause death.
That's actually a very good point, because you see the final battle on the planet at the end, you know, when they're doing their final mission, mm-hmm. and you have a very acute sense of anyone can die, because it has that war genre in the movie as well, where you don't just, you know, with most movies and to a degree, I guess, the original Star Wars movies, you assume everyone's going to survive, especially with that style of movie. But in this movie, even though you know, or you're aware that, you know, they're all going to meet a fate at the end, you still don't know who's going to be picked off along the way. And characters die easily, which I liked. And I think it really helps you care about them a little more, knowing that, well, not knowing that they're going to survive all the way. And I like that too.
And for new people that this is their first experience, especially kids, you know, they're probably expecting, oh, at least Jin and Cassian are going to survive, but there's like, oh, no, they don't.
Exactly.
Well, and that's the what I think what I like the most about it is, like, throughout that most of that battle scene, you're sitting there thinking, even I was sitting there thinking, okay, there's a chance these two get off the planet. And then the Death Star showed up, and I was like, nope, never mind.
True.
Well, I mean, I'm not, you know, it, for casual fans and for even non-Star Wars fans who might be their first experience, or they just don't have a very good memory of the early Star Wars movies, which is still going to be a large cross-section of people watching it, they're not going to think that. They're not going to assume that everyone dies. So I think for a lot of people, that would have been a surprise. And I was so caught up in the story myself that I wasn't focused on that. So when it did finally happen and we did reach the end, that's when I realized, oh, hey, you know, they're probably not going to get out. But I wasn't aware of that through the whole movie. So I guess it depends on how, you know, where that is in your mind when you're watching it.
Right. And I think since everybody died, it makes sense that they went back and have Vader doing all this stuff, because you're kind of at a downer. And then you see Vader coming in, and even though it's a villain, you're like, oh, yeah, here we go. You know, you're cheering for Vader, basically.
Well, who doesn't cheer for Vader on a normal, you know, everyday basis?
But you're cheering for him, but they also get out what they needed to get out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of worked really well. And it gave you that little hope at the end, like you were saying, after the downer. They still got out. They still, you know, achieved what they wanted to achieve and escaped.
And
in the meantime, you get to watch Vader just decimate everyone.
Right. And there's just so much, like, that scene is so tense. Like, you know they're going to get away, and you know they get the plans away, because we've all seen episode 4. But even then, like, the scene is so tense. You're like, oh, wait, no, run. You know, and the last second they get away, but...
It was close.
Yeah, they show just...
So well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone earned their paycheck on that scene.
And again, the space battles, I always love them, and I love this one too. And I love the use of the hammerhead.
Yeah, that was...
Pushing the dead in the water destroyer into the other one, so that was kind of cool. And that's how they got the shield to go down. And I guess there was a slam chance at that point saying, oh, if they make it to a ship, they could jump and get out of there.
True, but if the shield is extremely powerful, that shield also might have kept the Death Star from blowing everything up.
I don't know about that.
Of course, we have no clue about the power of the shield.
No, they took out
the ring.
Yep.
Which was what was generating the shield, so it doesn't really matter.
I don't know if the shield... And, well, that's a cameo we didn't mention. The Death Star with the Kyber crystal. Because Kyber crystal's been mentioned... But they've never actually said that a Kyber crystal powered the Death Star laser until this specific... Unless they did it in books or some point. But this is the first time I've known that it's referenced in a movie feature film. And, of course, that's what powers the Jedi's lightsaber.
Yeah. So basically, the Death Star was a giant lightsaber. That they could only really turn on for a few seconds before it ran out of power.
You could almost say that. Because it is a solid beam. Which is a
laser. And it's green.
Yeah, it's green instead of red. I got the wrong color.
Well, yeah. Do we want to get into all of why the Sith's lightsabers are red? Because that's an entirely different rabbit hole to jump down.
Okay. And it's probably two different rabbit holes anyway. So.
The only other fun part that I kind of went on is... Basically, we're jumping back to the beginning for this with Krennic and his Death Troopers and how they land on the planet where they meet Galen and the mother and them. It's like they have all this open area and they land where you got to walk a quarter of a mile to get to the house. It's like, why would you do that? Just land right next to the house.
Because it's a way better shot if they have to walk across a field.
True.
That's probably the answer.
So that was one where it was like, that don't make no sense. But yeah, movie magic stuff. Yeah.
Were you just talking about how they got down to the beach in time to watch the explosion? Or
no, at the very beginning where Krennic and the Death Troopers are landing on the lava. Not lava, but the darkened lava that's cooled, and then they walk forward to the Urso's homestead. It's at the very beginning.
Yeah, that does not make much sense.
And it almost looked like a quarter of a mile that they had to walk, at least a couple of football fields long.
So they probably could have gotten a bit better hidden.
True, but it was, to me, a great movie, though. There's very few flaws that I saw in it. I enjoyed it from beginning to end.
The one I mentioned, because I was slightly distracted and you mentioned movie magic, is they actually time-lapsed, or some similar word, the ending fights on the ground with the ending fights in the air. They did not happen in actual sync. That's why they had enough time to get down to that beach so that they could get blown up by the Death Star. Because if it was happening in sync, they'd probably be blown up somewhere within that building.
No, I think the Death Star came in after the fleet was there. Mm-hmm. And then the Death Star came in, and then shortly after that, Vader's fleet came in. Mm-hmm. That's how I remember it. So it was pretty in sync. There might have been a few inconsistencies, but fairly in sync. For me, I felt like it flowed pretty well.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. But yeah, there's probably a few things. You got to see a starfighter just kind of go against that shield and just smoosh full pieces. So it's like, ooh, they'll be scraping him off. The bug splattered on the windshield on that one. But overall, I enjoyed it. I'm kind of... Well, you said you were excited about Han Solo, but with all the turmoil lately, what do you think?
I'll see it.
You'll see it. Well, of course I'll see it.
I mean, it's... They haven't disappointed me yet, unlike other movies and extended universes.
Okay. So, what about you, Nathan? You kind of, with all the topsy-turviness of the Han Solo film, what do you have a feeling about that one?
Well, I've only just barely been keeping up on it all with what's been happening. Didn't the director leave at one point recently?
They fired the directors and brought in Ron Howard to take over.
Okay. Interesting, yeah. No, I mean, nothing about anything so far concerns me, especially as you guys were saying about how well Rogue One did. It's clear that they take these movies seriously. Looking from what I know, I look at the screenwriters.
Right.
That's sort of the first thing that I look at, and to see what they've done. And I think the screenwriters for... it's usually one or two for the... Does it even have a name, the Han Solo movie, or is it just untitled at this point?
It's untitled right now.
Yeah. So, I think one of the screenwriters was actually a co-writer on the original three Star Wars movies, which is a good sign.
Okay.
And I think also co-wrote The Force Awakens as well. So, there's nothing that concerns me there.
Okay.
And I like the idea of Han Solo, and... Also, there's obviously a younger new actor, so
right.
It has a lot of potential. I'm definitely looking forward to it as well, especially after Rogue One. I mean, they had, I think, two writers for that one as well. One of whom, I think, as I said before, was the writer for the first four Bourne movies, not the new one. So we ended up with a bad Jason Bourne movie, but we got Rogue One, so kind of happy with that.
True.
Because he left and went to write Rogue One instead with another writer. And he was pretty good. He wrote, he's written a few things, including more recently Nightcrawler, which was quite good. And then Rogue One. So yeah, that's all we have to go off, really. We don't really have much to go off. So that's really my opinion. It's pretty optimistic at this point. What do you guys think?
I'm excited with anything Star Wars. It might take me a little bit to get there. I haven't seen all the Rebels stuff, but it's on the radar to watch. What about the upcoming Last Jedi? It's the next one coming up in December.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about that, Nathan?
I actually didn't know it was that soon, so that's pretty exciting.
Really?
Only half a year to wait.
Another year, we'll be back talking about Last Jedi, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty excited about it. I think they needed to get The Force Awakens made. I think that just needed to happen first and to establish the new characters. And even though I wasn't completely happy with the development of those characters, I think the next movie won't have those same problems. So I think that there's a lot of potential for that one too, and I don't see any reason why it can't be a great movie from what I've seen so far. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well.
I definitely am. Everything with the news with Carrie Fisher, of course, that's kind of left them a little bit unsettled, but it's going to be interesting to see what direction Luke will take Rey, because it sounds like a lot of people are speculating he's going to be the last Jedi. He's tried in the past and failed, because that's where Kylo came from. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just, you know, there is no Jedi or Sith. It's just, and that's where Ahsoka is kind of at in Rebels, mm-hmm. I think, with the clear yeah. blades.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's there. Mm-hmm. People are wondering if that's where they're going to go with this, is the Ahsoka route. And would that be a possible cameo?
Maybe.
She'd be about, what, 10 years older than the Skywalker? Because Rebels is right before.
And Rebels starts 5 years before Battle of Yavin. She might be it. I mean, you could put her in there, but that would...
Or mention her.
Mention her, could yes.
Mention.
Yeah, because there are several things that happen in Season 2 of Rebels that they haven't... I don't think they've come down what happened one way or the other, because they left it ambiguous. Okay. So you'd have to come down on one side or the other and say, yeah, this happened, or no, this didn't happen. So I'm trying to avoid giving spoilers for anybody that... wants to watch Season 2 of Rebels.
Yeah, because we've only seen the first season.
But
he has those books, so could yeah. you know, she could be mentioned possibly in the book. And say, yeah. Well, I'm drawing my thoughts from what Ahsoka Tana mm-hmm. practiced. You know, something like that could be the cameo, like they did Hera.
Right, which would be interesting, because that would mean at some point he lost the ability to communicate with Obi-Wan and Yoda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True.
And so, you know, what happened there? Because at the other points, he could communicate with them. True. And you'd think as he got stronger with the Force, he could do it almost on cue, on demand, as he needed to.
Right.
So, I don't know.
True.
It'll be interesting. But the thing to know about the director of... Like, the thing that really turned me on to the director of The Last Jedi is that... he directed, I think it's Ozymandias, which is the second to last episode of Breaking Bad, which is the one that I believe went and won all the Emmys that year. So he didn't write it.
Yeah, that's right.
He didn't write it, but he directed it. So
okay.
You know, he's got some good directing chops, and he is one of the main writers of The Last Jedi. So
cool.
Is listed as the only writer. So is he the new director, or was he the one that was kicked off? I'm confused.
The ones that were kicked off were from the Han Solo film.
Right. He's the writer and the director for Last Jedi. And I don't think he has anything to do with the Han Solo film or even Episode 9. They went and grabbed the guy who did the last, not the last world, the Jurassic World director is directing... Right, Episode 9. So, but the writers for the Han Solo movie, that's Lawrence Kasdan, who did Empire, but then also did Force Awakens. So,
I'm sure that he might be having a few touches here and there. Or
yeah.
Catherine Kennedy might be having him kind of take a look.
Mm-hmm.
product control.
Yeah.
I think that's going to pretty much wrap it up for Rogue One. We want to jump back with Nathan and kind of get back into his Helix series before we jump off for the day. Of course, this is dealing with Alicia, Val, Ark, but we still have some old friends coming along. We have Jay, Damien, Sophia, and Nasira with us. And we also have Shi Yu, who's also a new one. And we kind of mentioned this in the last episode that he's progressing it through with Episode 6. These are digital contents. You're kind of taking your characters and like you've traditionally done with the Fifth Column series, you're doing the same thing in the Helix series. You're pretty much putting them through their paces, making them go through. I think the last episode 5 was in the Warsaw Pact Nation or somewhere, and they were jumping on roofs all over the place, getting hurt, getting shot. I mean, you're not kind to your characters. So, you have one that's kind of trying to get his regenerative power back. Can't quite remember.
Yep.
So, you got all your characters in a conflict, and you're tying them all together. So, how's the story progressing, and is there any tidbits you can kind of mention, or do you want to keep it under wraps until you release Episode 6 officially?
Oh, I'm happy to talk about it without... You know, there's no big spoilers. No, it's not like everyone dies in the end to get something off the planet. So I think we're safe. But it's been interesting because Helix is sort of an opportunity for me to write a new series in the same universe and be able to appeal to new readers who haven't necessarily read the Fifth Column trilogy of novels with Sophia and her gang. So when you start reading Helix, you're introduced to a whole new band of characters, and you're reintroduced to Sophia's gang as well. Obviously, if you've read them before, it's going to be very familiar for you, but It was a challenge to write that so that you could be introduced to them again and not have to know who they are. And that's really just because I don't want to have to force everyone to go through one particular book first, which was my first book, so it was probably, you know, it's not the best either. And to sort of force everyone to go through that, you know, it's like making everyone go back to watch the first Star Wars movie, which you should do, you know. But actually, maybe not Episode One. That would be taking it too far. But yeah, so that was a challenge. But I think that's worked fairly well. So you have two groups of characters, you know, keeping of the type of genres that these books are, which are thrillers with science fiction and also military as well. So you sort of got a touch of military science fiction there. But it still sort of exists within a thriller. I guess the thriller genre is the overall umbrella that it sits under. And that plays a lot into, particularly, you know, with American thrillers, they really come out of Cold War stuff as well. So that's quite fun to explore. So in the Helix series, you have two groups of characters, and one is ostensibly an American group, and the other is a Russian group.
Right.
But they're both actually good guys with a lot of problems. But then you have other bad groups as well from different parts of the world. So that's been fun to play with, that kind of Cold War stuff, which I love and is you know, a very strong theme in thrillers as well. And it plays well into science fiction for sure. So that's sort of the layout of the Helix series. And I've been writing those, as I mentioned before the break, as episodes. So they're smaller, they're novella sized, which has been, you know, I think they've been fairly mostly well received. And I think they're better received when all the episodes are there and you can just fly through them. But I think initially when I just released one episode, everyone said, "But what's this? This isn't a novel. This is just it's an episode." And it was okay because it was decent size for an episode. It was, you know, a bit over half a novel. Although some of mine are, you know, some novels can be quite large, so maybe not half a large novel. So it was all right, but as soon as people got to the end, you know, they wanted the next one. So
which is good.
That's the thing with episodic content, and it's been interesting to play with that and to write like that. And I think I'll continue to do that, definitely. But I think it's probably something that you'd want the episodes to be released fairly quickly. So that people aren't waiting around too long and you know, just for the next little tidbit, for a story that isn't as satisfying as, say, you know, a full novel, in the same way that a television series compared to a movie. So
true. And
so, yeah.
And you've kind of left these characters, like you said, it's episodes, so you're pretty much left with cliffhangers. And from what I gathered, the main gist is I'm mainly dealing with, we know Sophia and Damien and all of them, Nasir and Jay, are dealing with their thing, but I really like Alicia, and it's like, okay, we're starting to get more into that world. We're looking at, you know, one of the characters has something's happened to her and the ramifications of what that will do for that team. I won't go into details about that because that'd be giving a little bit too much away. And it looks like she is going to be possibly bringing in the Chinese element that you have out there as well that you've introduced.
Yeah.
So that's going to be, to me, exciting to see how that's going to be brought in and how that's going to intermingle, because in a sense, you're going to have three teams out there, whether they're... And Elisa's and Sophia's team are kind of working on the same goal.
It's touch and go.
And sometimes they conflict, sometimes they're working together. So I don't know, you know, how's this Chinese team going to work in the mix as well? So I'm kind of excited to see how that's going to work out.
Yeah, it's you know, they start off in opposition. I think the Alessia and Sophia, essentially representing two different ragtag teams. So it's obvious why I like Rogue One so much.
True.
And yeah, so you have those two, and they, you know, they conflict from the very start, and it's not really as simple as, oh, we're on the same side,
right?
You know, and that's, there's not, it's not really any fun if it was that easy anyway. So yeah, they have problems, and there are a lot of obstacles in the way of them working together. But as you see in episode 5 is really a big opportunity for them to work together on a very large operation, which is great fun. And it's still very temporary though, because things don't work out, and we don't know if they're going to still be working together. Right. And but we are working towards sort of, you know, the final final episodes where they could potentially be working together more permanently. So that's in the air, and it's something that I wanted to do that way. And I was quite pleased that by the time episode 5 was published and they finally were working together, that everyone was like, finally they're working together. So I was kind of happy that was wanted as well. And that I didn't do it too soon or too late. So yeah, it's been very interesting. And with Xiu, the Chinese character, and representing another team, which we'll come into it more in the next season, which might have a different name entirely for that. So
okay, cool.
Still in the same universe, but I was originally going to call it Helix Season 2, but I'm trying to get away from that name because, and I did this very stupidly, I called it the same name as a television series from sci-fi.
True, that is true.
Which I thought was okay because it had been cancelled after 2 seasons and was a few years ago. I thought, I really like want to use Helix. I'm just going to use it. Yep, and I still get people, and even when we were selling books at a festival here in Australia at Clunes, which is a little country town in Victoria, which is a book town festival. It's fantastic. And there were a few girls who walked past and says, oh, that's that series, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they were talking amongst themselves and they thought my books were that same series, which is great if you want to jack some, you know, and the name of something else,
right. It
wasn't quite what I wanted. So, and also, you know, if it ever gets adapted for television or something like that, or, you know, say Netflix wants it, they would not call Helix because it's the name of an existing series. Right. They would have to call it something else. So so that name will just be for this, and then I'll probably have a new series which will have a different name.
Okay.
And we'll introduce other elements, including, you know, the mysterious Chinese team as well, which will be fun, and Xiu. So in this series, in the Helix series, Xi is a very mysterious standalone character.
And we have the hooded character, which I have a feeling I think I know who it is, but I'm not going to say anything. For
you're probably right, but we won't.
So we'll leave it there. And you brought the purity into it, which has become the main gist of this, at least episode 5 for sure, and 4, I believe. So you're bringing in different elements that, you know, I'm just having fun with it. I've been enjoying it. So thank you for allowing me to enjoy all that with you.
I'm glad to hear that. Oh, and I actually was going to mention as well, I'm working on a secret book at the moment in the same universe that is just for one character.
Ah.
So it's a standalone, and it will be Xiu.
Oh, very cool.
I haven't told anyone that yet, so that's new news, and hopefully I'm working on that now, and we'll have that out later on. So that almost, it's still in the Helix in the fifth column universe, but is its own story.
So a little bit of exclusive news right there. Unless you want us to take that out.
No, it's all right.
Well, thank you for doing that. That's cool.
Exclusive unless we take too long.
No.
I just won't say anything until you release the podcast. It'll still be exclusive.
We at least try to get the ones with other people in them out.
Yeah, the ones with guests, we try to get up a lot faster. So that is very cool. Thank you for doing that. That's kind of cool and exciting because I'm interested in her, seeing what's going to happen there. So, and that's what it draws me to it, is you're making the characters interesting and you're giving them different quirks. So it's not just cookie cutters. You're making them their own characters. So that is nice to see. I think we're going to probably wrap it up. If nobody's out there that has had an explanation of this, Nathan's been kind enough to spend his afternoon with us while we've been up.
I think it's
about midnight now for
us. It is
us.
Midnight.
So if you've heard a few yawns or something during some of these,
sorry about that. That was my fault.
So, but Nathan's been always gracious enough to come on with us. So Nathan, thank you again for coming on.
It's been great fun, guys.
Are you going to come back for Last Jedi whenever we sit down and do that?
I think I'll have to, yeah. We're looking forward to talking about that.
We're going to have to do a yearly tradition starting, so it's fun. But for Nathan, definitely check his stuff out. Go to his website, NathanMFarugia.com. It's his name, NathanM as in Mary, FarugiA.com. And you can go to his Facebook page as well. We'll have links to those in the show notes so you can get to them as well. If you don't want to type it in, you can just go to the show notes. Look up his series, Helix. It's coming up on its 6th episode. And then also go back and you can read the Fifth Column trilogy. Again, these are things, if you're into the sci-fi military, it's one of those I think you'll enjoy. And it's not so far in the future, so there's a lot of references to some things that, you know, like in the Fifth Column, one of the funnest things I've read was, I think it was Jay, if I remember right, was down in South America somewhere, and he kills somebody with a serial premium that was Boba Fett or Jango Fett or something like that. So it was great. So bringing it back to Star Wars.
I'm pretty sure that was the scene in the airport.
It might have been. I just remember that. It's like, once I read that, I was like, oh, I'm hooked. If I wasn't hooked before, I'm hooked now.
Wasn't that in the second book?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That was in the Philippines, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm glad that's, you know,
for some reason I was really thinking that. Yeah, for some reason I was thinking it was in South America. I didn't realize Philippines. Okay. But maybe I'm thinking of where they started out in Helix. That's probably where I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, but these are enjoyable books. I think anybody that will check them out will get hooked as I did. So be sure to do that. I go through Amazon, and of course Nathan has been nice enough to send me a few things here and there. So thank you. Thank you, thank you. He's supplying my addict. He's my pusher. What do you call it? There you go.
Close enough. Dealer might be the
dealer. There you go. He's my dealer, supplying my need. So, but we're going to pretty much wrap it up. We've been having fun visiting about Rogue One and Nathan's novels that he's had out and his digital novels. We just been having fun. Nathan, again, thank you for coming on again tonight.
Thanks for having me.
We've been having fun. Hope everybody out there has been having fun listening. We'll see everybody on the flip side. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Hey.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.